Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 229, where we interview Nathan Kennedy from the New Money Podcast and get some advice for our younger listeners to help put them on the right path financially straight out of high school or college.
I always talk about in content that, yes, you're young and you've got a lot of time, but that's all the more reason to get started now because it'll be easier along the way versus, kind of backloading it and then having to, invest like $5,000 a month just to make retirement, and there's a lot of scenarios where that happens.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me, as always, is my high-flying co-host, Scott Trench.
Thank you, for as always, for piloting these intros, Mindy. Always a new one every week. I'll do better next time.
Usually you're pretty good. Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to Every Money Story, because we truly believe financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where or how young you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or maximize your potential in your early 20s, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
Scott, I am so excited to talk to Nathan today. He is a recent college grad, and he has learned some lessons from his financial missteps and his financial experiences in high school and college. So he's here today to share those with our younger listeners. So moms and dads, if you have kids who are in high school or college, this is a great episode to encourage them to listen to or to listen to with them, because we're talking about things that you can do now before you get into big, bad habits financially that will help secure your financial future.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed talking to Nathan. I think, my big theme from the episode kind of gotten going in the second half of the episode as well, where we start talking about what Nathan is doing on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis to just crush it, right? The way he sets goals, the way he works out, the way he listens and self-educates, the way he saves and automates that, the way he constructs his vision for his life, prioritizes family, all that kind of stuff. These are the habits I think that he's forming in his early 20s that are going to propel him rapidly toward financial independence. And I think that if you can attempt to emulate that in the first year or two out of college, for those listening, that is just going to set your whole life on a completely different trajectory than I think the normal in America.
I could not agree more.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages, until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Take control of your investments and secure a stable 8% annual return today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets. Nathan Kennedy, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
I'm even more excited, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Today, we are talking about things that our younger listeners can do to set themselves up for financial brilliance, or at least not financial devastation. So this episode is really aimed at our younger listeners. If you're coming out of high school, coming out of college, this is right up your alley. And mom and dad, this is a great episode to listen to when you are driving with your kids in the car and have a great discussion about this. Let's jump right into it, Nathan. Let's learn a little bit about you. Where'd you start?
Well, honestly, firstly, guys, thank you so much for having me on. From a very young age, you know, don't want to do the full life story thing, but money was always a topic that my mom wasn't afraid to speak about. And that's served me pretty well through my life, just kind of having an awareness of it and sort of knowing the value of a dollar. But in terms of financial literacy, you know, it took me a while to actually figure out that I was not where I would like to be. I think fast forward to university, I'm going out, I'm spending money a little bit recklessly, but I'm ignorant to the fact that, you know, I think that I'm good with money just because my parents would talk about it with me and I'm like aware of it. I'm sort of like more humble background. But I actually didn't know the fundamentals. I wasn't, you know, making a budget. I wasn't doing anything like that. And so what happened for me that was sort of like my aha moment was, on a whim, I just was like, how much money did I spend just going out one semester? And you added it up and it was like, I think it was like $2,500. Like, I was floored, like absolutely taken aback. Just was like, okay, this is not cool. I am not who I say I am, kind of moment. Like, and so I really had to humble myself and I kind of just dove into, every financial literacy content, like, you know, podcasts, books, audiobooks, blogs were huge, Mr. Money Mustache, all that kind of stuff, really just dove right in and never turned back. And so I just fell in love with it, so much so that a few years later I started the podcast and now I talk about it, and that's pretty much where I am now.
I want to go back just a moment. You said you spent money recklessly. I typed it out. I spent money recklessly in university, but I thought I was good with money. I think that's really important to focus on for a minute, because if you think you're good with money, you might just put your guard down, you know, mm-hmm. relax a little bit, and then, oh yeah, I'm good with money. I can buy one extra beer, or I can go out to dinner tonight because, like, I'm not paying attention to it, but I know I'm good with money, so I'll be okay. And that's a really important point. Like, if you don't pay attention to it, it can get away from you rather quickly. And you said you spent $2,500. That, in the context of my not being a college student current spending, I'm like, well, so what? But then I'm thinking back when I was in college, boy, $2,500 would have gone really far.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was one of those things where, you know, that's what most people, you know, a lot of people who have a problem don't know that they have a problem, you know, like that's the kind of problem. That's part of it. Right. And so, you know, to kind of actually see the numbers and the math behind it was huge. And I think, I always talk about in content that yes, you're young and you've got a lot of time, but that's all the more reason to get started now because it'll be easier along the way versus, you know, kind of backloading it and then having to, you know, I don't know, invest like $5,000 a month just to make retirement, you know, and there's a lot of scenarios where that happens.
Oh, preach. Yeah. What was that study? I always quote this study and I'm pretty sure it's a valid study, not like that 95% of all small businesses fail in the first 2 years. And then every time I say that, somebody will send me a note. That's not true. It's close to true. It's not like I'm saying 95 and it's actually only 3% of small businesses. It's really close to true. But there is a study done. If you invested $1,000 a month from the time you were 22 to the time you're 30 and then stopped and never invested any more money ever again, you would have more money than if you invested $2,000 a month from the time you were 30 to the time that you're 65.
Insane.
35 years of twice as much money isn't the same amount, is less than 8 years of half as much money. And that's just a mind-blowing comment, but math doesn't lie.
Numbers don't lie.
So yeah, when you're in high school, when you're in college, now is the time to make really smart money decisions that they can affect you decades down the road or 4 decades down the road. So I love this. Okay. So let's look at where you were financially when you graduated from high school and then where you were financially when you graduated from college.
Yeah. I mean, I maybe had $1,000 going into college. Like everything was, bursaries and, student loans, right? That's how I was funded. Ontario, I'm from Canada. So Ontario's, student loan program is actually pretty solid. And about half of, the funding that I got were bursaries, which I didn't have to pay back, and half were loans. And so what I would do is I would kind of live off that. And then I would work a lot in the summer. And another thing that I also maybe, you know, made me think that I was better was I was a really good saver. Like when I would work at an internship or whatever, I would just save all my money and then I would just live off it during the semester or whatever. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I kind of came in, just kind of did that for my years in university. And then, really what was the turning point was I started to work a lot more, hustle a lot more in my later years, to sustain my savings and maybe grow, and started investing and things like that. And, I did have a good amount of, debt coming out of school, but I was able to pay off a good amount right away and feel like I'm in a pretty good position, coming out of school too. So,
okay, let's talk actual numbers. Oh, sorry, Scott. Let's talk actual numbers. What sort of debt did you have when you graduated college, and how much did you pay off, and how did you pay that off quickly?
Yeah. So, essentially when I came out of school, I had $36,000 worth of student debt. But I also had around $40,000 saved up with the intention of, paying a good amount down and then sort of, stretching out the sort of a later amount. But then COVID kind of happened. I was also thinking about, you know, rental property. So there's all these things that are kind of going down. And what ended up happening is I put around $20,000 right as the moratorium period ends. So you get 6 months worth of interest grace fee period for your student loans on the federal portion. The provincial portion is accruing, but it's minimal. That's the kind of just an aside. So when that moratorium period ended, I put down 20 G's, was like, okay, and that leaves me with around 16, and I'll just kind of spread it out, pay it down. The interest rate's like prime. It's around like 2%. It's not too devastating. But what the Canadian government did is they actually paused federal loan interest on that portion. And because 99% of my student loans were federal, that I was just like, all right, well, I'll make my payments, but I'm not going to go over and above because it's 0%. Really padded my investments, and they're doing pretty well right now. And that's kind of where I stand today.
So what year did you graduate from college?
2020, like last year. So right as the pandemic. Oh. Yeah, right. I graduated into the pandemic.
Welcome to the world.
Yeah.
And so what has been your trajectory since graduating college with this? Like what's happened?
Yeah, I mean, like I got a job right out of school. So I work for a Fortune 500 company and I'm in a leadership program there, which is great. You know, I was able to build my portfolio now is around like 50,000-60,000 ETFs between work stuff and just my own personal tax advantage accounts. I've got around $25,000 cash because I'm looking into potentially going all in with a podcast, maybe a little bit of a padded emergency fund there. And that's pretty much where I'm at. And I think I have around $11,000 outstanding on my student loans and then no credit card debt or any other kind of debt, car debt, nothing like that.
And this has all been accumulated from savings at work for the most part and just applying it to investments in I guess a market that has probably done pretty well since you started investing seriously. You probably started right around that dip in March or April of last year.
Yeah. I mean, I have been investing probably since 2017, but, you're right. Like it's just been rosy. And I mean, there was a bleak 2 months there. That's the only bleak 2 months of my entire investing career, if you want to call it that. So it's one of those things where I've just been lucky to be started in a bull market. I think a lot of investors have. Yeah, I just continue to invest for the long term. That's what we always talk about. And I just continue to do that.
It also sounds like you worked throughout college, like mm-hmm. summers and I'm assuming winter break. Did you have a job during the school as well?
Yeah. So I bartended a lot through school, through the summer. Like that was my go-to. I think that the tips and the money and the people and the whole vibe was what I loved. And I really thought that, you know, I got a lot of what I put into it. So if I'd work long hours, if I'd give great customer service, it would directly correlate to how much money I walked away with tips, et cetera, et cetera. And so, but parlaying that, I also would do like on campus jobs. I think I researched every bursary, every student, you know, every scholarship, you know, while you're in school. A lot of people think scholarships are before school. There's so many scholarships that you can apply for while you're studying. And so I just applied to every single one I can, and I was able to land a few there, some bursaries as well. And it's remarkable. And I, you know, I can't necessarily speak for the States, but at least in Canada, and I'd imagine the States as well, there's so much money up for grabs. There's so much money out there. And so, you know, kind of working as hard as I could while also finding, call it easier opportunities to apply to under applied to scholarships, bursaries, et cetera. I was able to really, you know, fund my education and, you know, come out of school pretty okay.
Okay. I've got about 17 points to make on all that you just threw at us. So first of all, I'm not familiar with the term bursary. Can you share what that is? Is that like a Canadian thing?
It's like a scholarship. It's essentially like money that they give you. You don't have to pay it back.
Okay. Oh, I think we call that a grant here.
Grant. Yeah,
would you say
thing.
That's a grant?
Literally okay. The exact yep. same thing. Yep.
Most of our listeners are in America. So I just want to translate Canadian English into American English for those listening.
No problem.
But I've also never heard that term before. So that's interesting. Okay. You started off saying you were a bartender. Mm-hmm. To everybody listening, if you have the opportunity to be either a bartender or a waitress or a cocktail waitress, take that opportunity because you make so much money,
yeah.
So much money. Oh my goodness. I used to like easily clear $100 on a weeknight mm-hmm. being a waitress. And then on the weekends, I would bring home $200 a night. Of course, I was working Friday and Saturday night. I wanted $400 plus one more shift is $500.
Yeah.
I could make so much money. And if I'm working at the bar, I'm not out spending money at the bar. So, and being a bartender, I watched the bartenders. I was a waitress and I was making $200, but the bartenders are making like $300 and $400.
Oh, it's crazy.
And you don't have to
yeah.
work at a student bar. You can go off campus and work at like a real bar.
Yeah.
Sorry, apologies to all of you who have student bars, but students aren't rich. So they don't have tons of money to tip, but like employed people are rich and or they want to appear rich, so they will tip better. So yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Learn how to make drinks. It is such a good skill.
It's so
to
fun
have
too.
Because you and it's fun.
So
it
fun.
Was all It's hard to be in a bad mood when you're waiting tables on people that are happy all over the place.
Yep.
Okay. So second, I just learned, I was today years old when I learned that you could still apply for scholarships while you're in college. I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah. There was an article 1,000 years ago, this woman sat her daughter down and said, I don't have any money for college. So if you want to go to college, you have to apply for grants and scholarships and things like that. And she applied and she got something like $300,000 in scholarships. She didn't even apply for student loans. She got all this money simply because she applied. And in many cases, she's the only applicant. Oh, absolutely. What was the episode with Zach Gautier? Was it episode 41 or was that Kyle Mast? I usually have these right on the tip of my tongue. 64? Maybe it was 64. Anyway, this our episode with... sorry while I find this, people.
Take your time.
You can listen to me fart around. 64. Episode 64 with Zach Gautier. He has 900,000 ways to pay for college. And one of them is applying for scholarships. But there are so many ways to fund college outside of student loans. If you take your junior and senior year of high school and sit down and apply for everything, write a really great letter, write that you tailor to every single application. I mean, it's a process. It's not just, you know, send it out to everybody. It's a process. But write the letter, get great letters of recommendation from people who know how to write a great letter. Ask everybody to write you a letter of recommendation so that you can have them at the ready and, you know, submit them. But yeah, there's so much money available.
It's crazy.
If you just put in the time to find it and talk to your high school, talk to the colleges and, you know, talk to everybody. Sometimes if you work at the college, you can get discounted tuition.
Absolutely. And
the grants and the scholarships that are out there. And then you can do it in the middle of school too. I didn't even know that. I'm so excited.
Yeah. You know, and there's something you said there that's so crucial is every single student that's listening is like, reach out to your financial like department because they will help you. Like they want you to win. Like they have an interest in your success. Like they want to make sure that you're getting everything you can. And so I had connections with several of them. They knew me like on a first name basis. Like, oh, Nate, like we don't have anything for you this month. Like check back next month. Like no joke. And so like they, you know, you don't have to just do it yourself. You don't have to just, you know, definitely you can find a ton online, but you know, these are professionals that want to see you win. Like reach out to them. And most college and university, even community colleges have some sort of department that, you know, specializes in student funding and things like that. And so like leverage the heck out of them because that is what they are there for.
I love it.
So besides from, you know, getting these great jobs and these scholarships or bursaries, if that's the plural of those, Did you make any mistakes or were you successful? Do you think you kind of navigated it all pretty perfectly?
No, he was perfect.
No, yeah. Perfect. No mistakes. No, you know what? I think really the biggest thing was, you know, spending. It was spending still being, you know, I'm not a very detail oriented person. I really have to work hard to front load and set up systems, but detail orientation is a struggle of mine, honestly. And so, obviously budgeting requires being in the weeds a little bit. And so that was tough when I even first started to getting into this and even today, like I really do have more of a flexible approach, but, just because I have that in mind, but you know, I would struggle to stay on budget for certain categories. Maybe if it was food, eating out still, like, you know, stuff like that. In general, I feel like my spending is very much under control, but I'd say that's probably the biggest struggle that I have. Maybe if it's, I set up a regular cadence of checking in with my budget of like, let's call it every week. It would be like every other week or something like that. So definitely there was trips and falls along the way. And it wasn't as smooth as maybe I'm making it sound. I think that's been one thing that just in my life in general is making sure that I'm nailed on the smaller details and, but still sort of like keeping in mind who I am, my personality and things like that. And trying to set up a system around that as well.
I really like what you said. You set up a regular cadence of checking in on your finances. That is so crucial, especially when you're starting, because it's the little things that add up so quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, it would slip through the cracks sometimes. And so does part of me think I could have been like, way further along if I were to be a little bit more nailed on that stuff earlier. Like, of course, but I can't beat myself up over that, right? And nobody can. And so, you know, that's one thing though. And yeah, it's, but I honestly think if I don't like little small details, but if I'm able to do, make it work and do that, I think so many other people can as well.
So let's talk about some of those flexible jobs that you had on campus.
Yeah. So my school had what's called a work study program. So essentially, I think the Ontario government would give a boatload of money to the school, and it's intended for students to sort of work for it. And so I had a job at our local gym, and it was like, it was not a very hard job. I'll be honest. You kind of just walk around the gym and you make sure that weights are put away and you make sure that people are behaving, but you're really not doing all that much more than that. You're just like a supervisor. And so I did that for, I think, 3 years. And it was awesome because, you know, I like to work out a lot. I would work out in the morning and then I do a shift and then it's on campus. So I just go to class afterward. And so I think that's money. If you can find a shift on campus, if it's not there, if it's at like a local restaurant, you work at the Starbucks or you work at, you know, the McDonald's that's on campus or whatever it is. It's just so, convenient for your life, and you can just go to work and then go to school and then go to work or whatever it is. So yeah, no, that was the only job really I had.
Were you able to do homework at that job, or was it kind of demanding your full attention while
you couldn't have your phone? Like that's the one thing. So like, you keep that in mind, but they were really strict. Like you couldn't do anything but that, right? So you weren't, you know, upstairs doing homework, things like that. And even though there would be times where I'm like, shoot, like I need to be studying. I got a midterm after this, but yeah, no, that was the one thing that you couldn't do. You had to be fully engaged on walking around.
Okay. Well, that's still, you're getting your steps in and mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure you can, as you're putting the weights away, ooh, let me just
get a little pump. Yep.
Put him down, get yourself a little workout as you go through, or here, let me show you the proper stance for that. And then do your 10 squats. My husband got a job at the computer lab and we're older. This was a long time ago, but there was not a lot to be done. Sometimes the printer would jam or somebody would need help with a program. But for the most part, he just kind of sat there and he didn't make a lot of money, but he was getting paid while he was able to work on his homework.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's, if you can find something like that where it's cool, like that's it's permissible to do that, then do that, because then you're killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, that's, you know, a little bit of think outside the boxness is so beneficial and can just really propel you. He didn't have to go to work and then come home and study, which is very different than your bartending gig. You're probably not going to be able to sit there and study unless there's a big snowstorm, in which case you don't want to do that anyway, because you just would rather be home than sitting around. But yeah, there was not a lot of times to study when I was waiting tables, but that's okay too. I made a lot more money than, I think my husband was like $5 an hour or something at the computer lab. So again, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
Early
90s. That's easy money though. That's easy money.
Yeah, that it's very easy money. What were some mistakes that you were making while you were in university? And what were some of the mistakes that you saw your friends making?
So I think, like I said, the biggest mistake was even just, because I don't necessarily want to say it's a mistake to go out and spend money and enjoy yourself, because you're young and that's what those years are for. But I think there's definitely a way to have the best of both worlds, where you're making sure that you're allocating money and you're being responsible, because like, I still had fun. I still went out. I still had the whole student experience, but I was definitely more calculated about it. And so, yeah, like that was the first half of university, like that I was just kind of mindless. Like I was doing reckless. Like to me, the reason I say that is because I would go to the ATM with my credit card and take out money. And like, that is like a whack load of fees plus cash advance plus just a disaster. Like the last thing you should do financially is to do something like that. And so that's what I'm talking about when like I just wouldn't really care. And so that was the biggest thing for me. And that's why I always talk about it so much, is you can have even better time and save like 75% of the money you would have otherwise spent. I think in terms of like maybe stuff that I saw, maybe reasons why I started the podcast, is because no student is talking about money, or rather they're joking around about how little they know. I would find that so much in conversation that it'd be like, how do I money? Like, haha, like it's very accepted. That it's just like, we all don't know what we're doing. And that would like be like, dang, like I kind of don't like that. Like, I kind of want to do something about that. But I found that I would devour financial content and things like that. But I totally was like, yeah, like this just doesn't land for a lot of folks that are around my age, because it's just, you could just fall asleep if you're not completely like invested in it. So that's why I started the podcast, is because I'm very candid on my podcast. I'm just me just kind of talking about the concepts. And I'd like to think that it lands a lot better, because it's just as if me and you, I always say, it's always just me. It sounds like me and you are just having a drink together, and I'm just telling you like it is, or whatever the case is. And that sits a lot better. It's more relatable for folks, versus kind of listening to an audio book that's, to me, is like the most fascinating thing in the world, but maybe to most, you know, 20 somethings, it probably put them to sleep.
Well, and you said you had the best of both worlds. You would work and you would be conscious of your money and you would still go out and have a good time. Mm-hmm. It isn't black and white. It isn't, you can either have a good time or save your money. You mm-hmm. can do a little bit of both. I mean, what are some free things you can do? You can go on a picnic or go on a hike or go on a bike ride, or you know, do things outdoors where there's not a lot of money being spent or any money being spent. You can pregame it at home, buy a 100%. Six pack for your house, and then still go out and have, you know, one drink at $5 instead of five drinks at $5. You know,
absolutely.
And I don't want to just surround it on drinking, but let's be honest.
Yes, that's what it is.
Scott, did you ever have alcohol in college? Never. Was not the.
That, I thought about money in terms of the amount of cases of natural light it would purchase.
The craft beer lover in me cringes, but my dad drinks that.
You got to be economical. Like you said, like, you know, little tactics like that where you know, you go to a house party a little bit more often, or you pregame at home more. Like it's funny. It's like joking around, but like, you know, dead serious. Like if you just go out straight out, like you're going to spend much more money, you know, splitting an Uber, like little things like that. Like they really, really add up.
They do. Splitting an Uber. You should have a bicycle at college. If you're going away to college, you should have a bicycle. Exactly. Or maybe a car if it's convenient to park it. Or maybe just walk everywhere, because it's a college town. It's not that big.
True. Transit systems, you know, a lot of universities subsidize, you know, the transit pass, for a lot of students, you know, that's all I did. Like I would ride the bus a ton. I got a car in my last year, but like for most of university, like that's what I would do. And it's usually really reliable.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single-family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going out to your, you know, postgraduate life here, now that you're graduated with this, you have an interesting, I think, philosophy with money, or at least that's what your thing says to me here, is one, you're saving a ton. So you must be earning a pretty good income and saving a huge chunk of that income right now. And you're applying that money in, you know, what seems to be all stocks and then a cash emergency fund on top of that. Can you talk about your philosophy with money as it kind of stands after college graduation, and why you're thinking that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with kind of what I'm doing now, a lot, initially I was saving a lot of cash because I was looking to get into a property, but I think, and that's still, you know, the goal over the next maybe 2 to 3 years. But right now, I'm really like, this whole social media thing, the podcast, it's like a business, and it's a budding business. And now I'm starting to generate income, and I'm really starting to like really invest myself in that. And so, I want to have a good amount of cash. So I've started to reallocate a little bit more of my savings towards that. But as it pertains to my investments, yes, it's like 100% stocks, mostly ETFs, some individual stocks. And that's just long-term money for decades down the road, right? The whole compound interest over the long term, sort of similar to the example we talked about. And I'm just a big index fund guy, an exchange traded fund guy. And so that's why my money is where it is. Why is my money in more balanced portfolio of like maybe 50-50 bonds or things like that? I just think, you know, given my time horizon, you know, I'm quite young. I've got a lot of time to ride out the volatility, and just go after, you know, the appreciation of the equity. So that's why my allocation is as aggressive as it is. And then the cash, is just sort of on hand for if maybe just a rainy day with you know, the business or something like that. And
how old are you?
24.
24. Yeah. So what I want to point out is that, you know, I believe that people in their early 20s who accumulate $25,000-$50,000 in cash the way you have with your thought approach, I just want to completely agree with your approach and how you're thinking about this, because the ROI on that 25 grand is going to be infinitely higher, I think, in a risk-adjusted sense. On if you bet on yourself, if you pursue a house hack, if you take a chance on a side hustle, and then betting on yourself, the first point being launching a business or doing that kind of stuff, you're going to either learn so much more or have a shot at having 100% ownership of that type of business, not having to go out and raise capital and all that kind of good stuff. If you know, to start a business idea or whatever, do it completely your way. That's just such a much better use of money, I think, than putting it into the index fund or into a retirement account, in my opinion. So I just wanted to commend that approach and the way you're thinking about it, because I think that's absolutely right. And that is very specific to, I think, a certain situation in life where that applies. I think, you know, if you're, if you're 10 years into a career and have a family and all that kind of stuff, maybe it's a little different of a choice and your time horizon is different. But at this point, I think it's the logical approach. I think it can be hard to articulate or hard to define exactly why it's the right approach for a lot of folks. But I think more and more people should consider that. How do I get off to the races in the first year or two out of college and build up a huge chunk of cash and then use that to exploit the opportunities that are coming up around?
That's 300% right. Like, I'd like to say, like, when we spoke, Scott, when I had a chance to speak with you on the podcast, like, that's one thing I really took away is, like, you got to bet on yourself, man. Like, you really do. When you're young, like, you, if you've got something and you think you have a shot, like, take the shot, because you've got time to see it through. And it, no matter what, you're going to learn something from it. And so, like, super, super inspirational from that point of view. And so, yeah, like, that's definitely it. Like, to me, it's money that I'm going to invest or going to have to go through the more, if I decide to leave my job in a few months or whatever it is, and I want to just boom, give it a year, go all in, whatever. Like, I'm able to do that. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm, my head is sort of at right now.
I think we have a dramatically improved world. I'll go that far. If more people did exactly what you're doing with this, you don't have to take the option. You can get the promotion at work and they can keep you. But you can, to have the option, I think, is what compounds the probability of you maximizing your potential. And so that's fundamentally what you're doing with this. Let me ask another question. How often do you work out?
6 days a week, 6 days a week.
Awesome. How long do you work out for each of those?
Like, maybe, depends, but like, maybe on average, like 40, 45 minutes.
Love it. How much do you read?
I'm a big audiobook guy. But
that counts.
Or listen.
Okay. Yeah. Probably, like, honestly, like, probably listen to like around 4.5 hours, like, between reading and audiobooks per week.
Per week. Awesome. And how much other self-education do you do?
I mean, that's probably the biggest one, but I would say a lot of articles, a lot of like research, a lot of online stuff. But most of the education comes from either podcasts or audiobooks or reading. But there's like, I'm like a self-improvement junkie. Like, I live off that stuff. Like, yeah, like, just as much as personal finance. Sure. I think personal finance is here, and then the self-improvement stuff is like right there too.
4 hours a week is an average. If each audiobook is an average 8 hours, that's 25 books per year is the pace that you're going at, just on the audiobooks, the 4 or 5 hours front with that. So you're working out 6 days a week. You're reading 4 to 5, you're reading 20 to 30 book equivalents a year with audio, with this kind of stuff. You've saved up $25,000 to $50,000, and you've already got accumulated a $50,000 portfolio 1 year after graduation, right? Like, this is the path. I don't know what is going to happen. Here's the mistake you can make in your situation, is modeling it out and believing the model, because it will just not come true. You're just setting up so many synergistic things together that they will compound if you play your cards right and are reasonably opportunistic to go your way in excess of whatever financial model. You know, if you're listening to this and like, I'm doing all that. Yeah. Like, you have to then bet on yourself with this kind of stuff. Your mental models, you know, you compete, you think about like, hey, I'm competing in the business world with somebody with 10 years of experience, right? Well, 10 years of experience is great, but I'll take the guy who's read 25 books by different authors on that topic all day over the guy with 10 years of experience on that, right? I mean, there's things experience can't teach, and there's things that books can't teach, right? So there's puts and takes. But one is so anyways, I just can't commend you enough. I knew that after talking to you. You didn't set us up with that information ahead of time, but I could tell coming into the call that those other pieces were in place in addition to the finances, which I think is really cool.
I really appreciate it, Scott. That's very, like, incredibly humbling coming, from you in terms of like the best way possible. Like, that's just like crazy that you just spoke of me in that light. So thank you for that.
I think it's just fact, right?
Yeah. It is crazy though. Like, you know, I literally didn't think about it like that until you said it like that. And you're right. Like, I try to focus on the inputs as much as I can in terms of, okay, like, let me hit it week after week. But I haven't, like you said, like thought, like, you know, I don't have a crazy goal in mind of terms of like, let me read like 30, 40 books, even though that is like a really great goal. But I think it when you set up the inputs and you set up the leads rather, to really set yourself up there, like, yeah. And then I'm like, yeah, when you were saying, I was like, I guess.
Reading 30 books is kind of silly. Like it's like I'm just being completionist. Yeah. Unless you like it, but educating the equivalent of 20, 30 books on whatever is either interesting or, well, let me ask you this. Are you reading just in time learning, or are you just kind of consuming out of habit as part of it? But are you also kind of selecting materials that are relevant to what you're working on?
It's probably like 90% like stuff that's like relevant to like where I'm trying to go with my life. And then I'd say like, there's a small percentage, like maybe like some sports stuff in terms of like podcasts that I listen to, just purely entertainment. But most of it is for some sort of end purpose.
Awesome. Now, are you doing any type of goal setting on top of this?
Yeah. So in my room, like I have this big, like white sort of, it's like a rollout whiteboards thing. It's actually pretty cool. Like I don't know if anybody's interested in it. It's on Amazon. Like it's one of those, but, I write out like my goals for the month, for the quarter, and for the year. And then I kind of just have it. And to me, it's just like, I love just visually seeing it every morning. It becomes like one of those things that's just like in the background, but I try to like look at it and kind of, I have like a little checklist at the top. And to me, it's just inspiring to kind of see some of the numbers or some of the legs that I kind of want to hit over the next few months and years. I don't do anything further than like, I think I have like, and this is from like Brandon Turner, like the Vivid Vision. Like when he told me about that, like, well, he didn't tell me, he told everybody, but, but when I heard about that, I went and read that book, and that was crazy like that. And so I have a little 3-year vision at the bottom, and then sort of everything that ladders up. And, that's definitely where I like to, that's the where my planning is and stuff like that. And the one thing that I've learned is that like, you're not going to nail every single one. Like you're going to miss sometimes. And so kind of navigating that, and being, you know, kind to myself for maybe not hitting some sort of figure or number that I hoped for the quarter. Like it's all good. We'll just get after it next quarter kind of thing. But just having that sort of process has been really helpful over this past, I think I started that about a year ago.
Love it. What else are you doing that you think is, if you kind of sit back and zoom out and peer at your life as a third-party observer, what else are you doing that you think is conducive to success? You have goal setting. We have 6 days a week working out. We have 25 book equivalents a year. We've got huge savings rate. We've got an entrepreneurial venture on the side. What else?
Family, man. Like family, like making time for it. Like I don't do any work on Saturday, half of Sunday. Like I just relax with my like family and my girlfriend. And that has just like been money in terms of just feeling like refreshed and things like that. And it's something that like I had a really serious conversation with my girlfriend about, is because I'm very darty. Like I've always got these thoughts coming in and out of my head, or let me go do this or that or this or that.
Did you say dart-y? Because it sounded like dirty.
Oh no, darty, darty, like
D-A-R-T-Y.
Yes, not dirty, not dirty. Not dirty.
I just want to clarify for people who didn't quite get
darty. Right. I've got all these like ambitions and things that are kind of coming all over the place. And when I kind of, but I, that would lead to burnout all the time throughout school, even like there was times, you know, I guess I could talk about this too. Like there would be some summers where I'd be working like literally like between internships and bartending and whatever, like 85, 90 hours a week, just like grinding, right? Obviously not sustainable. And so I remember talking with her, and we kind of set that up like, hey, like, let's just take one day where we just don't do anything. Like you're not on your phone, whatever. And it was just, it's just been amazing. And so now I like really look forward to that. It's a nice sort of break from everything, work and the podcast and life and even working out. Like I just chill, like just take a full day. And it really helps me out from a sustainability perspective to kind of just be recharged to go after the week, the next week.
That is yet another really important point to hammer home, because especially during COVID, when people were working from home, it's so easy to be like, oh, I just got to finish up this one thing. And after dinner, go back to your computer because it's already there. And it's so easy to work a whole lot more than 40 hours a week. And when you're not working, you're thinking about it, or you've got your phone up and you've got Slack open just in case somebody reaches out because they need something. Mm-hmm. They can wait till tomorrow, unless mm-hmm. you're a doctor, in which case don't take my advice. But, you know, unless there's life-threatening things going on, they can wait till later. And taking a moment away from your phone, like, what's the worst that happens when you don't have your phone next to you? You missed somebody's Facebook update. Like, whatever. Who cares?
Not a big deal. Yeah.
You missed somebody tweeting something funny. Well, you can go back and read it later. You can laugh. Ha ha ha. LOL. You can post that anytime. Mm-hmm. It's very rarely something life-threatening that you're going to miss. Now, of course, if somebody's in the hospital, maybe keep your phone with you, but don't, you know, look at it all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so easy to be glued to your phone all the time.
Yeah. It just, you know, it never stops. But like, you can, you know, there's part of it where it's just like, there's always going to be things on your brain and things, what, you know, businesses never stop kind of thing, whatever. But like, realistically, like, yeah, you're right. You take yourself out for just five, like, even if it was like 5-10 seconds, like, nothing's going to happen. Oh, it's like a minute, an hour, a day. Like, the world's not going to, you know, go up in flames just because you don't look at your phone. Right. So that's, and it's so funny because I tell myself that rationally, but sometimes I'll catch myself like on my phone. I'm like, yeah, just put it away. Like, you know, like just relax, man.
Nathan, I think that some folks listening will find, you know, this I think is what a lot of people should aspire to in their early 20s, is something like the schedule and the habits that you set yourself to, Rithette. That's conducive to success. Unfortunately, we're only getting the top half of you, but I imagine you're looking very strong and buff with the 6 days a week with all this kind of stuff. But every part of your life is going together with this kind of thing that you're what you're doing with all this kind of stuff. What is the one thing that you think you should start with? Someone else is like, hey, right now I kind of like, I'm drained from my work. I don't have goals. Last thing I want to do after a long day of work is go listen to like an audio book on success or some crap like that. And, you know, I don't want to go and like, I don't know what a vision board is. That sounds kind of cheesy. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to work out 6 times a week. God knows I can only find, you know, time for 2 workouts a week, maybe, with that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of somebody that like that. And they're like, there's no way I can replicate what Nathan's doing. What's the one first step that you think someone should take to begin going down that path, and maybe having more of the habits that you've built for yourself fall
like,
in line?
Honestly, I honestly think it's like just consuming content. Like, I think that is just such an easy thing to start doing, is just consuming content around some of these strategies. There's so many like beautiful, awesome, fantastic, interesting, engaging content creators on YouTube, like shows like this, like where you can just listen to and just be on your way to work or whatever. And if you don't like, if it's boring to you, then go find another one, because I guarantee you there's so many out there on so many different topics that you'll find one that you like. And it'll teach you a lot. And it's sort of like a easier stepping stone. Now, obviously, eventually you're going to have to take action. You're going to have to go out and start building the budget. You're going to have to go sign up for the gym membership and actually go. You're going to have to take the action. But I think if you can just start watching like content, like I used to always say, you know, there's this one thing that you could do is measure your wants and needs or this or that. Or I'd always give like a more like action oriented one. But I think like literally like, I've told this to people and seen it through, where they're like, yeah, I just started watching YouTube videos of this guy, Ali Abdaal. And then he talked about this productivity thing that I started doing. And then it led to this and it led to that. And so I think that's just there's so many awesome creators out there that you literally takes zero effort to watch and maybe learn from. And that'll be a great stepping stone to you taking that first step, that action in whatever area of your life you're trying to improve.
I couldn't agree more. I think if you put, I think that if you have to figure out one first step to begin moving towards some of these things, it's listen to audio content, right? And yes, we're a podcast, and no, that's not self-serving. Yeah, but like that's what I did, right? I like, you are the average of the 5 people you associate with most closely, right? And so if you spend most of your time that you're spending intently listening or attempting to learn in the car, for example, or at the gym or whatever it is, listening to people who are talking about how to improve yourself with that kind of stuff, that's going to be your normal normal world. Nathan's normal world is listening to successful people talk about what they're doing to improve bit by bit, day by day, 1% better every day kind of thing. And so he's getting better 1% with that kind of stuff. And I think that's what you have to do. I think that's the best first step. I would completely agree. And then everything else begins to fall into place. You're like, why don't I have time for a workout this week? Like, am I like this dude is doing a bunch of workouts. Why can't I do that? Right. I don't have a vision board, but like, am I where this person is and wants to be? You know, I don't know. Like, those are the types of questions that you begin asking as you start consuming that type of content. So I think it's a great
absolutely.
Place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just think I that's what I did. Like, I'm no joke. Like, I think the first thing I did was like finance podcast. I literally searched up and this podcast, and you guys could go listen to it. Optimal Finance Daily. It's like a fantastic podcast. It narrates, bloggers like Mr. Money Mustache, Financial Samurai, all those guys, Kimiko, budgetmom.com. Like, that was my jam. And I just started listening to it. I'm like, holy, what's fire? What's this? What's that? And it just like, that was the first step for me. And like, and it led to kind of where I am, and hopefully, you know, some other place down the road, but we'll see.
Yeah. And you know, what I like so much about Optimal Finance Daily is you can hear the voice that the author writes in. So there are some people who find Mr. Money Mustache to be fascinating, and they want more content from him. And there are other people who think that the tone of his voice is a little too harsh. It's okay if he doesn't speak to you. There's somebody who does. And there is content out there that makes sense to you, that speaks the language you understand, and that will help you further yourself down the path to better finances, even if you don't want financial independence, just having better finances in general. There is a voice for everyone. And, you know, I was just at a conference last week for podcasters, and one of the questions came up in our Stacking Benjamins meetup that happened before the show. And they said, you know, are there too many financial podcasts out there? And Joe said, no. Dave Ramsey gets like a million listens a day, or an episode, and everybody else combined gets, you know, another million listens per episode. So there's 300 million people in America. That's 2 million people that are listening. And there's probably a lot of overlap between Dave and the other podcasters. Nobody's listening.
Seriously.
And you need to listen to this. And your life is so much better when you don't have to worry about money. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, listen and then everything's going to be fixed the next day. But everybody in this space is giving you steps to take. You know, everybody has a different first step, but there's steps to take to get you to financial intelligence and financial consciousness. And, you know, when you start being conscious about it, then you can really take some big action. Regarding the vision board, the first time I heard of the concept of vision board, I'm like, yeah, Scott called it cheesy. I'm like, yeah, that's cheesy. What am I going to do? But do you know who has a vision board? Tiffany Alice. She's got like a billion of them. And does anybody crush it harder than Tiffany? No. Scott doesn't do an actual vision board, but he sits down with a piece of paper every morning and writes out his goals. And then keeps them in a binder and just adds it to the next, so he can go back and see all the goals. For how long have you been doing that, Scott? Like 7 years?
Yeah, this year I've actually been, or the last quarter I've been doing it weekly, but it's not been working as well. So I'm going to go back to doing it daily. But yeah, I have probably done that over 1,000 to 1,500 times over the last 7-8 years.
And do you still have all of your papers?
A lot of trees. I have almost all of them. Yep.
It's fascinating to go back in time and see where you were at. Oh, look at the progress I've made. Or, hey, there's something that is not getting done. I'm still not making progress on this. That's where you focus. But yeah.
And sometimes I kind of have this little thought of like, you know, old Scott is one day might like looking at this. So I might put a little extra effort into today's, you know, because, you know, when I'm 50 years from now, what did I do, you know, back in the day when I, you know.
Knowing Scott that I know right now, old Scott will love looking at this stuff.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really awesome.
No, but I think it's a tool to move you towards the goals. And it sounds like you do goals every day as well.
Pretty much. Or I review them or I look at them. I don't think I write them out every day. That's really cool. Maybe I should. But I think, you know, just having it constantly sort of there in front of you and or having some thought process around it, you know, and I guess I should say mine's just words. Like, it's not, I don't draw out, I don't have pictures and stuff like that. But if that's what gets it going for you, then do it. Like, whatever it is, right? Whatever it takes for you to stay on path and grow and, you know, all that, improve and all that, like, then do it. It's going to be different for everyone.
Yes. And maybe daily isn't what you want to do. Maybe weekly's better. Whatever works for you is the only thing that has to work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's awesome. Scott, I'm going to ask you yet again for the link to your goal page, which is very simple. You can set it up, you know, take Scott's and set it up however you want. But it's really, really great. So that'll be found in the show notes, which are at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow229. Okay, we need to get to the famous four, Nathan. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay. Step number one, what is your favorite finance book?
It is The Wealthy Barber by Dave Shelton. I love that book. And then I think he has a remake of it as well, but it's just a really easy read. It's a storytelling, just solid. And it teaches on pretty much every financial concept there is. And so really, really love that book.
Have we had that recommendation before, Scott?
I don't know. Maybe once before. I don't know. But I've read that book and I think it's a nice, it's an easy, quick, relatable read. It'll be really easy to digest. And I think it's really good. It got a lot of good fundamentals in it. You can guess what you have to read it to find out who the main character is. What was your biggest money mistake?
Yeah, I guess I would say it was going a little bit too hard in one of my years in university. But hey, like it turned me who I'm today, so it's all good.
So you have no money mistakes.
No, I mean, you know what?
I spent frivolously in college a few times. I love it.
I guess I could also think of, you know, I would say, crypto. No, I know, but crypto 2017, put way too much money into it and then lost it all and then sold. That was probably a pretty big mistake. And it kind of taught me the fundamentals of like buying and holding. Now crypto is a whole different space and we could get into that, but that was definitely one where I like was like, wow, like that is a how to not invest kind of thing.
Yeah. And people right now who are into, what is it, GameStop and AMC theaters and whatever they're doing right now.
Right.
You can make money investing and you can lose money investing, and you have a better chance of losing it if you're just following the trend and not doing your own research or not investing intelligently.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah.
Okay, what is your best piece of advice for people who are just starting out?
I would say the content, like just start watching content, consuming content. You know, I hate to beat a dead horse, but like that is just the single easiest, most conducive thing I think that somebody can do literally as soon as you finish this. If you're listening to this right now, you are doing that right now. So you don't even need to do anything. You're already doing it right now. But to continue to do that, continue to surround yourself with that, you know, and it'll definitely make you more likely to take that action that'll actually end up leading you down the right path.
I love it.
Love it. I do want to acknowledge that while I think I'm wired the same way as you in a lot of ways with this consuming content side of things, for those who can't tell while we're listening, I think that we listed six things there, all of which are things that you want to do. Set goals, consume content, work out, save, budget, be disciplined, have a cadence, automate, like all that kind of stuff. But I think everybody's going to have a different starting point. And so if yours is not in the consumption of content, start with another one. Maybe working out triggers all the other good habits, because while you're working out is when you're going to listen to whatever it is. But like, figure out what that first trigger is and maybe start with just consuming more content in a general sense. Although we're probably preaching to the choir on that one. All right. What is your favorite joke to tell at parties?
I knew this was coming. I literally, I couldn't. I think... I honestly don't even know. Like a knock knock joke. Like this was one where I literally sat with for so long. I was so stressed. I was like, I'm just gonna tell them I don't have anything. Like I really don't. Like knock knock joke. But
I got you. I got you. You know, the son doesn't have to go to college because it's already got like 28 million degrees.
There you go. There you go. That she just saved me. She just
saved
me.
Isn't that horrible?
That's a fantastic joke.
No, it's not.
That's because it's Scott's joke, right?
No, I got that. I looked up college student puns.
Who would just attribute it to unknown always means me. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Where can people find out more about you?
I'm at the New Money Pod on Instagram and TikTok. I shoot me an Instagram DM. I respond to every single one. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all podcast places at the New Money Podcast. Yeah, reach out. I'd love to chat with you guys. And thank you so much for listening to me babble on here. And I really, really appreciate it.
Nathan, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. I have a feeling that a lot of people who are listening are going to then bring their high school and college kids over and say, hey, we have to listen to this together. And that's what I wanted. So I'm so excited. Thank you so much for your time today.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, appreciate it, Scott, Mindy. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Okay, that was Nathan Kennedy. Scott, I think you could sum up this whole show by saying Nathan is conscious about what he's doing. He's not letting life just drag him by and going with the flow. He wants something, so he has made conscious choices to help him get there. He's conscious about his goals. He's conscious about his spending. He's conscious about what he wants out of life. And I think that this is such an inspiring show.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And I think that this is the kind of person who's going to be a leader of industry or a thought leader or, you know, already is in a lot of ways, but was going to just have a killer career with a lot of this stuff or have some sort of enormous impact on the community with this. So I'm really excited to see where it goes. I think I loved talking to that. I love seeing some folks trying to do everything in their power to maximize potential. And I'm just so optimistic about his future here.
I am too. I am so excited for what he's got. He's in a couple of years, he's going to call back and be like, yeah, so I'm killing everything in life. I'm totally crushing it. I'm the best ever. And except he won't say that because he's humble too. I have a request of our listeners today. I want to tell your story. And somebody posted, millennials, quit whining. I paid off $150,000 in student loans and own a $400,000 home because I save. It's not that hard. I make coffee at home. I bus instead of Uber. I shop the sales. I had my parents pay off my loans and buy me a house because I'm daddy's special boy. I got Hulu with ads. Like, it's supposed to be funny, but in the comments, I said, what kind of stories do you want to hear? And he said, personally, I would love to hear more stories about people with salary ranges in the $40,000 to $75,000. The Park Ranger episode was a lot more relatable. Same for me, as Matt said, below $40,000 to $75,000 salary, someone that is making their way through the confusing and sometimes misleading financial world. Small business owners that haven't hit it big yet with variable income. I want to hear someone fumble through life and 180 degree shift from 30 to 40 income to high income at the age of 27 to 35, maybe not fire, but learning how to grow. So if this is you, I want to help you tell your story to our listeners who will get so much value out of it. Please email me, mindy@biggerpockets.com, or fill out the form at biggerpockets.com/guest and choose the money show. Go into details when you are filling out the form so I know what your story is about, because we want to tell the stories that you want to hear.
I just want to echo that, Mindy, because I think a lot of people we hear are like, no, I need to get through this next inflection point before I'm ready to come on the Bigger Pockets Money Show or whatever that is. And I just want to like get that out of people's heads. No, like the best stories, everybody's got a great story. The best story is everyone's story. But some of the part of that best cadre, I guess, is that the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. The best some of the best stories are folks that have fumbled a few times, that have had, you know, challenges in the past that they've overcome and then gotten good with money and begun to get on the right track and build wealth for their family and that kind of stuff. And so we want to hear more of that. There's no like, you're not ready, or there's a milestone or checklist that we want you to have completed before coming on the show. No, your story could be helping somebody right now who's struggling through something that you've already gone through or overcome. And we want to hear that on the show. And I think we want to make sure that everyone's clear on that. Please come on the show. If you've got something that you can share, that's about something you've overcome, even if you're not all the way towards your money goal quite yet. No one's all the way toward their money goal, except for maybe, what was his name?
Oh, Steve Adcock.
Yes. So maybe if Steve Adcock has already completed his money goal, that guy. But yeah, but most of us haven't, right? Most folks have not completed their journey and are still a work in progress with that kind of stuff. And that's that. But there's still powerful lessons to be learned. So if you have an income, especially under that $75,000 mark, there maybe and we want to hear your story and how you're moving towards financial independence or building wealth, because that will help a lot of people.
Yes, and if you have a type of story that you would like to hear that you haven't heard, please email me, Mindy@biggerpockets.com, so I can ask for guests like that too. To be a guest on the Finance Review, which we release on Fridays, you can go to biggerpockets.com/financereview to apply there. Okay. We normally don't ask you very much, but I think we've asked enough today. Scott, should we get out of here? From episode 229 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench, and I am Mindy Jensen, saying fly high, sugar pie.
The market is changing. Finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.